So, hello everyone. I am, first of all, I want to just be able to start off just defining what weariness is, and I will share a little bit about how it affects my life. Okay. So, first of all, according to the psychologist, they basically define weariness as a complex state of depletion, often referring to a more profound, persistent exhaustion that it's more than just simply being tired. You know, it is physical, mental, emotional underlining issue, more than just needing rest, because I've tried that. There are different types of weariness. There's a mental fatigue where you're persistently, like, consistently exhausted. You're basically running on overload. Your concentration and decision making is not there. It's called the brain fog moment. There's also an emotional exhaustion. For me, that's where a lot stays, because I play a whole entire movie in my brain a lot. And this type of weariness basically stems from being overwhelmed, pain, or painful emotions such as grief, loneliness, anxiety, anger, which are some of the different things that I struggle with. Basically overextending yourself, feeling drained. And then there's wired and tiredness, when I'm like running on 100 miles per hour because of my, ADHD brain, and so it's prolonged stress, feeling like physically exhausted. And sometimes that can be where I can just like come in and just sit down on the couch, and I wake up the next day. I didn't even make it to bed. And that would happen very often. And I don't even realize when I'm actually about to hit that stage yet. It just, boom, I'm here and then I'm gone, And then there's a different type of weariness that's dealing with dissatisfaction and boredom, where you just feel like nothing, everything just bothers you. Like somebody breathes, they bring the wrong way. And it's like it's getting on your nerves, And you feel disconnected to people, different things, just a grogginess all the time. And then there's the Jungian perspective. It's like a soul weariness. An analytical psychologist by the name of Carl Jung states that this is a deeper form of worry where it's like it's affecting your soul. Your soul is exhausted. And that basically arises from living a life that does not align with your authentic self, not realizing who you are and who you are in God, and living that double life. It can be very, very exhausting. And so, these are different ways that we do get worryful. But I love the scripture that is in Matthew 11, 28 to 30. It says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest." And so, like, I didn't really understand what rest means. I'm like, okay, I'll go to sleep on time this time around, but I wake up even more exhausted. I feel like my times with God is just like I get so exhausted because I feel like I'm not getting anything out of it. And so not realizing that I'm not staying still enough to really get to know who my authentic self is. And so I'm on this, like I tend to go on these journeys, right? Like I'm like, okay, I need time alone just so I can think, And so just so I can get to know who I am, And God reveals his ways in so many ways. There's like, I think about Isaiah 41:10. It says, "Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you." And he goes, "Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand." I think about that scripture and I'm like, you know what? I don't necessarily, when I am really stinking it up as a Christian, God's righteous hand is right there. And sometimes I can feel like, oh, because I'm not righteous enough. Oh, I did something wrong. Da, da, da. He doesn't want to hear from me. And it's all in my mind. And my soul is like, can you just stop the drama? I was like, I can't. My name is Shakespeare. But nevertheless, it's just understanding that God's righteousness is enough to carry my unrighteousness, and I'm okay with that. And that needs to be enough. And so, the benefits of it's like not running with your mind is lies in Isaiah 40:31. It says, "But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not get faint." And so I just think about that. I can be very analytical. I'm like, okay, how do I run without getting weary? I'm not even in shape. But again, I'm running all the time with my brain. It doesn't want to shut down. And it's like, somebody say, "Shay, how you doing?" I'm like, "Well, what do you mean? Da da da. What does she mean by that? Do I look a little certain way?" Da, da, da. And I just create the whole scenario. Chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Overanalyzing everything, and that can be so exhausting. And so if you're going through that where you feel like, yeah, I'm weary, and no matter how much sleep that you're getting, you're still at the same place, take it to God. Like, be still and just quiet your spirit, figure it out. Talk to other people that are really good at that. Sometimes I have to get multiple advice from different people and just learn how to imitate what that looks like, because I don't necessarily have a clear view of what that looks like. But then God always brings me back. Psalm 73:26 says, "My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion." How long? Forever. Forever, I could keep working on this until my soul feels less anxious, less stressed, less worried, because I'm taking it to God. Yes, it's great to, and then talking it out with each other, right? Like, hey, this is how I need to talk about this so I can just hear from other people's perspective. He doesn't want us to live alone and do this life to, by ourselves. So, I get to grow in this space forever in this lifetime. And the wonderful thing is I get to do it with God. I get to do it with my brothers and sisters, and know that, like, life is stressful. We will get weary. Sometimes sleep does not fix it, but you can always trust in the word of God. When I do that, I'm like, man, this stuff works. It doesn't fail me. So I hope if you're ever in this space where you're like, hey, I'm running on low, talk about it and sit down and try to figure out, am I being my authentic self? What is really stressing me out? How do I shut my brain and just welcome other people into that space and don't crash on a couch like I often do? All right. So that's all I just wanted to share with you guys.
All right, well, let me start sharing my screen because I really like what Shay said about authentic self. And then just I'm going to put this in presentation mode. And then the idea of having weariness and stress, just saying the word weary sounds stressful. Saying the word haggard sounds stressful. So certainly it's great. The description of weariness, and we've all been there. I think what I can share with you tonight is a little bit about how a physical trauma that happened to me caused the weariness and the stress and the, how do we say it, everything. So this is the book. I think people were looking for this again in the chat, and our topic is Courage to Face Tomorrow. So, for those of you who are at Sunday service and you heard me do communion, and if you didn't, don't worry, I'll touch upon it again. I did describe that, 5 months ago, I did have an accident. And from that accident, I was in a hospital for 10 days. And that was mid-May. And it's 5 months later, and I'm still rehabbing. I'm in physical therapy 3 times a week. There's a lot to learn from this event that occurred, and I'm still processing this. So Sunday was the first time that I was able to actually talk about it out loud in public. And now I'm at a point where I'm still processing this. And to be honest, going through putting together these slides triggered a lot of emotion in me. So I want to make sure it's real and honest with you so you know how painful, not just weary, but how painful I went through physically. And how depressed and hopeless I felt. So the next slide, let's go to this. So you heard me, if you're at communion, share this passage, right? And this is a page from that book. This is day eight. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me." I also shared in communion that, the Passion Translation says, weaknesses are portal to Christ's power. Now, I want to frame up for you that I did not go to this passage right away when I got into my accident. This was not what I was thinking. I'm still processing this whole idea that if today I'm still rehabbing 5 months later, the question for me of uncertainty and fear is, well, this whole numbness in my left shoulder and this whole numbness that I received from that accident, is it long term? Is it chronic? Is it going to be, how long is it going to be here? Am I going to have to live with something of a long-term handicap? I don't know the answers to that, but I do know this. I struggle thinking about it and the uncertainty of it. So that's why I started to read this passage, in preparation for communion. And I got a lot out of it, and I learned a ton from what Paul was trying to hopefully convey, I think, in what he learned. And if you go into the entire chapter, you kind of can extrapolate something from what he's trying to describe. He is in touch with an individual that can boast about being in some different spiritual realm, right? He believes boasting is not about yourself and all your strengths. It's not going to benefit anyone. It really isn't, right? I mean, anyone can get in front of any audience on a podium, whether it's a church environment or a corporate environment, and just talk your ear off and even yell at you with conviction. It's not going to go anywhere. Okay, it really isn't. It's not going to benefit people unless Paul has realized the weaknesses that I share, because I'm human like you. And if I share it with you, there's some power to it. And if it benefits you and others, then we could learn. And this is what I've learned so far, is that pain can teach us a lot, and comfort is no great teacher. In fact, it'll never teach us anything. Okay, so let me take you back to May of this year. So I made this collage on the left side here for my wife because it was our anniversary recently. I made it and put it into a birthday card, an anniversary card. It was our anniversary, September 16th. However, I want to take you back and myself back to this time, because this is important to frame up for why I was very depressed and very distraught, and not just weary. I mean, weary is just an understatement. I was hopeless, because this obviously screams out loud, "Hey, happy joy!" Of course, right? It was. This was prior to the accident, of course. So, in our traveling in Europe, I just was so excited to get away with my wife and just to go on vacation. I want to take you back because I want to take myself back, because I want to know, I know there was such positive times and elements when we were there. Because first of all, you're traveling in a foreign country, you're traveling, yes, as a tourist, or as a couple. I needed to get away with her. I really did. There was a lot going on in my life at the time in May, and a lot of it had to do with work. A lot had to do with family. When I say family, like my blood family, like my blood brother and my cousins and stuff that happened 2 years ago that's still stressful today. All right. But at this time in May, before we went on vacation, I was working through a lot of unresolved issues, and I was angry. I struggle with anger, but I'll say, probably was just upset at a lot of things. And not only to mention what the world we are continuing to go through, and the nation, and just seeing things, headlines, whether through social media or newspapers, and being like, is this really the world we live in? And all I can sum up and say of the upset I had about everything that's going on in the world is, to me, I get angry a lot when I see hypocrisy and pride mesh together. That to me is a toxic cocktail that is nuclear. And when I see that, I'm like, it's like I don't want to be around these people. Like, and Shay did a great description of authentic self. And when I'm around people who are both hypocritical and prideful, and they're telling you how you must live, then to me, it's like, I'm as human as you. I'm as real and raw and mistakeful as you, and how dare you tell me or control me on how I should live? Okay. To me, that just twists me up inside, and it's just, I can't process. I can't be around this type of toxic sort of cocktail stuff where it really is finger pointing, finger pointing, finger pointing. So there was an element I had that also at work. Okay. And I'll just keep it brief because I'm not here to talk about the bad things I had at work at the time. But let's just say the individual who oversees me at work was an individual who had, claims he has Christian values. And today I'm resolved with this person. But at that time in May, that individual caught a lot of my social posts and was telling me how to do things and controlling my silence and doing a lot of finger pointing. When I was trying to communicate to the individual, I'm just trying to help out in society, help people who are marginalized. That's all I'm trying to do. And I was being silenced, and it was frustrating. So that's all I need to say about that is, and all I need to tell you is I was at a point where I was trying to fix things, I was chasing things, and it was stressful. It was wearyful. So I couldn't wait to go on vacation. And so we went on vacation, and the picture on the right side, if you see the two wine glasses, is about 8 days into our vacation in Italy. Went both to Rome and Umbria and also Tuscany, these regions where we traveled. This is a photo from our resort where my wife and I had just finished cooking classes. And I take this photo at this time for a reason, because the moment I took this photo, I said to myself, okay, if Jesus himself would fly down on a horse from heaven and the horns would blow and he'd say, the book of life is closing up, I'd say, perfect. I feel like I'm in heaven right now with my wife enjoying this wonderful lunch, this organic meal of these pea pods picked straight from the Italian farm that came right to our table, that we went to cooking class. We cooked our own pasta. We're drinking fine wine. I said, perfect. I had a great life. Take me down, Lord. Take me now, Lord. Right. I also said things like, hey, if the leaders of the world wanted to start World War III right now, that's okay. I'm in heaven right now. This, you can take me now. This is a good time. I took this photo saying life is good. Even though you say, you see an individual here who's happy and on vacation with his spouse, deep inside, I was in turmoil. I was upset at a lot of things, family. When I say family, there's some stuff going on internally with my blood family, my blood brothers from 2 years ago, gossip, cousins getting involved. It was horrible. They tore our family apart. It was stuff that's unresolved still to this day. But this photo on the right of that countryside at that resort in Italy with the pea pods, me enjoying God's created world and saying, if heaven's going to be better than this, take me now. Well, guess what happens? In just the moment of like 1 hour later, not only an hour later, after this lunch, I signed up for a horseback riding class. I took horseback riding when I was in college, so I decided to take a class. I told the trainers, "Hey, consider me a beginner. It's been, 30 years since I've been on a horse. I don't want to get into the details of how I fell off the horse. I fell off the horse, but just so you know, I went from this moment." And if everyone could look at the screen, I know you see tiramisu, correct? Right? And if you don't see tiramisu, look at it. Doesn't it look great? It looks wonderful. Well, that's the moment when I bit into that tiramisu for dessert. I'm like, this is heaven. I'm in heaven right now. Well, not only an hour later, here I am riding a horse in the beginner class with those two trainers, right? If you know a good lawyer, let me know because I should sue them based on what how they treated me. I'll leave it at that. But not only within an hour later, the moment when I said it was wonderful, take me now, Lord, I'm in heaven. Here I am back again on a horse, wonderful part of created world. I'm on a horse again. In college, they taught us how to brush the horse's mane. That's the class I took. I only learned a little bit about, not even galloping, but just cantering. I learned about in that class the relationship with the horse. I'm just trying to explain to you, I'm back. Almost where I felt like where I was in as 21-year-old, just learning about just things like the created world, a horse. But within an hour, I was airlifted off this field, hospital, and for the next 10 days, I was here in a hospital. And I take photos because there's some element while I was going through the hospital. I'll get to the depression part and the hopelessness and all that, that this is what I looked like. You know, I had in my left side here, my left shoulder, I couldn't move for 2 days. I couldn't move my whole left torso. They said to me, the doctors said, you receive trauma to the thoracic region. So that's the entire lung area, all that kind of stuff. So I basically fell off the horse. Again, the trainers didn't treat me well. It was just, it's a lot. So when I fell off the horse, and I'll repeat what I repeated in communion, but if any of you have been at a fire, a campfire, and you like to throw sticks in the fire, and sometimes you take a stick and you crack it in half. That's how loud of a crack I heard when my whole left torso fell on the ground. I was out in the field, and when I hit the ground, it was such a loud crack, I knew I'm in trouble. And I couldn't move on the horseback field for, I just couldn't move. But while I was waiting for the paramedics, I couldn't breathe. I heard the trainers like goofing around. They didn't know what kind of pain I was going through. They're like, I can't even get a phone signal back to the hotel. I'm like, great, I'm going to die out here. And they can't get a signal. And the reason I say I'm going to die is I couldn't breathe. I couldn't say things like, help me. It was hard to say that because my lung was punctured. Okay. All I remember, and I did say this at communion, is when the EMT came and the, you know, the helicopter arrived and they got out of the helicopter, they cut through my shirt. When their eyes lit up, it's a reaction I will never ever experience, hope to never experience again. But I could tell what that visual of their eyes lighting up these EMTs, it was saying, we gotta hurry. We don't have much time. It really felt like that. Why? Because I couldn't breathe. I wasn't sure how long more I have breath left in me. And basically getting to the hospital and going through the MRIs and all of that, drugging me up. You know, my wife, when she arrived at the hospital, it was obviously around midnight when I finally came through, and she whispered to me, she said, you have 8 broken ribs, a collarbone broken, and a scapular. So I had 10 total broken ribs. Now, this photo is sometime after the accident, right? A few days, whatever, or maybe even 5 days. But I could not move a millimeter. And for 48 hours, I was in this hospital bed and I was powerless. I went from that photo that you saw of me sipping wine with my wife and having farm-to-table fresh green peas to saying, I'm in heaven, to now I'm like in purgatory. And all of the emotion and the wariness, of course, and all of the thoughts that came through my mind. Well, first of all, you got to understand in a hospital in a foreign land, they don't speak your language. Okay. So you don't speak their language. And I, you know, little things like seeing this was their chaplain and seeing him dressed as a first century disciple. I was like, oh my gosh, these little things of like, that, you know, God is here, right? I had to grasp onto little things, very minute things, to fight the pain that I was going through. I want to land here and show you that you can't see it, but as I'm looking out of this onto, you know, the wall on the other side here, on the right side, you know, there's a TV, and of course it's all in Italian, so I can't watch TV, right? So I'm sitting there for 48 hours, not moving, a tube stuck in me, countless X-rays. Them telling me you have multiple fractures, this and that, you're going to heal naturally, but it's going to take time. And they said to me words like, you'll have 3 months full recovery. Now it's been 5 months, it's not full recovery. So I'm still asking questions like, how long is this going to be? This numbness that I feel, it's not normal. I don't dress normally anymore. It takes time. Sometimes I walk around. And it's not so much it impedes my work, but when I'm idle, I'm just watching TV, I'm like sitting there going like, this is still kind of going, there's stuff going on here and it's painful. Or it's not painful, it's awkward. It's just not normal. But for the entire 10 days, I will say this, the only thing that I could stare at because I didn't have a TV. I had basically spotty Wi-Fi, so my phone sometimes worked or not. I was powerless. I was immovable. I was on morphine for 4 straight days. Every time I moved, it felt like I had a bag of broken glass in my left torso. Everything felt broken. The only thing that I was able to stare at was a cross on the wall. And of course, I had all that time to think, and think. So I want to go back to the slide and take you through again some moments that I thought about. This is day 14 from the book, Courage to Face Tomorrow. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. The Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Now, it's great that that's in the Bible, but when I was going through the hospitalization and I was on morphine and I was going through physical pain, did I immediately turn to this page? And did I immediately go through, great, I'm going to be strong and courageous and I'm not going to fear? The question is, did I do that? The answer is, of course not. Of course not. Because in my experience, I don't know about you, is I don't wake up once in a while saying, hey, I wonder what it's like to be handicapped and have 8 broken ribs. What's that feeling going to be like? I didn't prepare for this, right? Nor did I ever have an experience where I had 8 broken ribs, right? They say it takes 11 seconds to breathe. So every 11 seconds or 8 seconds, whatever the doctor said, every 8 or 11 seconds for those first 2 days, I was in pain every time I breathed. All right. So it forced me to think of things like, if I can only breathe normally again, if I can get back to normal, that would be stability for me. So what did you do, Carlito, to face tomorrow when everything felt like to me uncertainty? Uncertainty of what? Well, of course, this was the last weekend of vacation. So my mind was like, I'd be at work right now if I never went to that horseback riding class, if that trainer never treated me the way they treated me. I'd be at work. I'd be normal. I'd be back in the States. I'd be with my family. I'd be with my kids, with my mother-in-law who lives with us. I would be back home somewhere safe, somewhere where it's normal. Instead, every day for those 10 days, and especially those first 48 hours, I couldn't move. My wife had to go home to the hotel every day. She couldn't stay over. They didn't allow her. I was alone. I was powerless. I was in solitude. And maybe on that third day, after those 2 days of being on that hospital and not moving, that third day when they said it's okay, you can try and get up, getting from the hospital bed to the bedside table was a chore and an exercise on its own. I had to have three people help me get sort of upright. And then just to sit down and be in pain every time I was moving, but they suggested to do that to start getting my frame of my body back into like a normal, like, so, basically the bones could grow back. So did I say to myself, woohoo, let me be strong and courageous? Of course not. I was in pain. What? And then I obviously thought to myself, with no access, to even just calling people, I had to like leave sort of text message voicemails to some of my closest, friends, brothers in the faith, all that kind of stuff. I was far removed physically from any kind of normalcy of home. So all I could think of was this. Let me take it step by step. Every day I did what I thought, I'll do this. I'll read John 14 through 16. All I remember in the chapters of 14 through 16 is about how painful life is, but Jesus is here to comfort us, right? And in fact, even in John 15, or is it 16? Here I have it for you. Let me show it to you. You guys know this verse, right? It says there, it's right here, right? Where is this? It says, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. So I didn't have the strength to overcome. I had to go to where the words were spoken at some point in the history of time to say, you can overcome. And that's Jesus. And I had to read this over and over and over every single day while I was on morphine. And by the way, while I was on morphine, I just got to tell you, there was an interesting time when I was in the hospital. on drugs that it almost made me feel like I was in a different world. And there was some sort of connection. I was seeing visions of just stuff that just didn't seem right. But it made me connect with, like, hey, I'm in a physical world and my mortality is like that, a snap of a finger. I could be gone tomorrow. And it was very depressing. It was really depressing. There, I had to go through, and I even did things like, let's go back to the slide. I pressed the audio button. I pressed that little speaker button. I had to listen to the audio of these words over and over and over while I was in pain. And why? Because I didn't know where else to turn, right? So you know, it was really tough, and this is a good steal of the page from last week. We looked at this, God's strength to overcome the fear of the future. I was facing things like, what's my future going to be like when I get home? My boss, is he going to keep paying me? We don't even have a medical insurance plan. I work for a startup company. Like, what's going to happen? I had all these insecurities and fears, not to mention a lot of existential crisis. What do you mean, Carlito? I walked, well, what eventually when I was able to get up and walk around, I asked to ask questions. I had to ask my wife, like, am I being punished? Like, why am I going through this? Like, I've been speaking out about justice in the world and how God is after the margins and loving people at the margins, and I'm speaking up for them. Is this some sort of punishment? Like, I had to ask this question. I had to get angry with God. I had to get upset. I was like, why am I going through this? And James, right? You guys know the chapter in James, like, consider it pure joy when you face trials, right? So I'm going through these trials. How do I face the future that's so uncertain? Do I say to myself, hey, let me just put on some joy and, just consider it? There's another message version that says, consider it a sheer gift. This is no gift right now. Being in pain, physical and emotional and spiritual. This was not pleasant. I don't wish this on anyone. Many of you seen this. I've shared this with you as almost like a teacher. I showed you, like, hey, when we're going through trials, we have these sort of states of mind. Well, I'm the of the therapy school of dialectical behavioral therapy, which means we live in the middle, the wise mind. We have an emotional mind and a rational mind. Let me tell you, did I work on my skills? Did I say, hey, let me get through this by working my skills? Barely. I was hanging on like a thread. Was I all emotional? Absolutely. Was trying to be rational? Are you kidding me? It's like, I have all this time to think about stuff. Do I want to think about why I'm here? Why do I deserve this? I was trying to be logical. There's no answers, right? I just had to go through trying to get through time to, really kind of just heal up. But it was painful. It was like, why am I going through this? Day 17. This is straight from the book. Here's where we get to sort of hopefully my lesson to share with you, and what the lesson I'm still learning is God's provision in the wilderness. This is day 17 from the book that we're reading. Then the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. The people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. Okay, so God does provide for you while you're in the wilderness, is so to speak, this lesson, right? So I had to find any kind of semblance, or the word I'm looking for is any kind of evidence that God's still working in my life during this time at the hospital, right? Slowly, I started listening and opening up my eyes for whatever I could find that was positive. And I want to share with you, this person, like I said, is a chaplain. There's little things like, looking at the cross, like, I do believe God's there, but why am I going through this and all this kind of stuff? But I do want to show you and share with you this individual. Her name is Rosella. And Rosella was my roommate at the time. And she entered the hospital room 2 days after me. Her accident was also a thoracic trauma to the thoracic region, but hers was different. She was in a motorcycle accident, fell off a motorcycle, broke 8 ribs. Sorry, broke 8 bones. It was like 6 of them were ribs. She had a scapula and all that. And her joke to each other, her little joke is like, you beat me by 1 bone, Carlito. So it's a little things like that. But she'll always say to me, because we developed a strong bond, she'll always say, Carlito, you saved my life in that hospital room. And the truth of the matter is, I can say that about her. And here's why. All the times that she was going through the pain, there were times when she was crying. There's times that she couldn't persevere going through those questions, like, how do I face tomorrow? I had a choice to make. I was going through the same emotions. I could sit there and commiserate But I dug deep, and all I could say was things like, "We can do this, Rosella. We've got to persevere." All right. And she knew when I said those things, she knows what I'm going through. I'm not trying to sugarcoat it, but I was just trying to tell her we've got to fight for another day. We can get through this. I mean, she was saying things like, "This is depressing. Like, I don't know why, blah, blah, blah." I mean, if you've ever been to a hospital, I know we all have, just think of being at a hospital for 10 days straight, right? On drugs, morphine, and going through the physical pain that we went through. It was easy just to check out. So I had to sort of find the tea leaves, quote unquote, right? In my life, what was positive? Well, she was hugely positive. Here's why. There were times when I had to explain to the nurses who speak Italian, and I don't speak their native language, of course, right? Maybe a little bit. It was mostly pidgin, but I could try to describe what I was going through, but I couldn't, right? She stepped in. She actually, in college, was a linguistics major. She studied English. She's born in Italy, but as a lawyer and working for a global law firm, she speaks multi languages. So it was to her pleasure and joy to step in and translate. But she caught a few instances when she said to the nurses, no, he's saying this. And she spoke their language, and they're like, "Oh, okay, I see, giusto, giusto." So for me, it's like if I got something wrong, one nuance, one word wrong, who knows where that could have led to some wrong treatment or wrong diagnosis, or I could have been there an extra day or two, right? That's the beauty of just looking for things like these provisions, right? The other thing is this. This is Grant. We'll show you this. This is a picture of what I was staring at after I left the hospital. Now, that's another chapter, another story of how I got out of the hospital because my wife did it. She was able to get me out of the hospital after I was officially discharged. But what I want to describe is this picture and why I took it. Is even though I went through all of that physical pain, the duress, the stress, the weariness, you name it, there were times little things happen that if you don't catch it and you see it and you just see it as, oh, it's just something. But if you see it as like, wow, God's really working behind the scenes here, then you can appreciate it in pain that God is trying to provide for you. So we ended up, my wife and I, at a small little pension, an apartment in Perugia, Italy, which is where the hospital, the city, is located, where the hospital Perugia is. It was an acute hospital that had all, the intense, emergency room, trauma surgery, all that kind of stuff, right? If I had gotten a lesser degree of service, who knows how long I would have been out there. But Perugia was the hospital that they sent me to. Great choice. And in Perugia, we were able to stay an extra 5 days because we had to stay to get final medical clearance to fly back home, right? After such a tragic, traumatic incident like this, not tragic, it's kind of tragic in my head, but traumatic experience to the physical trauma of what I received in my body, all those broken bones. It's not like you just get out of the hospital and just get on a plane and go. I had to clear a lot of things before I went. And to do that, we had to stay somewhere near the hospital. Well, on social media, it's just crazy. Brother here, sister there, finally Steve Johnson connecting with one of our very own sisters in Christ in New York City, and she raised her hand and sent a message to Sherry and said, "Look, I have friends who live in Perugia, and they have an apartment there, and in fact they're leaving their apartment for a month. And they said you could use it and stay there." So we didn't have to go in a hotel. We have to pay extra for hotels, all that kind of stuff. We needed an extra 5 days to stay in the area of Perugia to finally go and get our final medical clearance before we left. Now, during those 3 to 4 to 5 days that we stayed in Perugia, I woke up every day to this. And to me, when I woke up, I said, "This is God's created world. This is amazing. Look at this." During this time of hope, hopelessness, depression, sort of like I'm trying to be positive, but not really. I'm trying to fight through, but not really. I'm trying to make sense of this, but not really. I mean, there's a lot of like, oh my gosh, look where I am. This is beautiful. This is gorgeous. This is God's created world. And I'm experiencing it and I'm enjoying it. So I took that as like, give me a little breath of fresh air, God. Yes, give me a little breath. Let me keep going. Okay, now I can get up and I could face the next day. Now I can go. And sure enough, because we're able to sort of rehab enough just to be within the hospital within the 3 or 4 days of waiting for the final medical clearance, that they were able to say, okay, you're cleared and now you can go. And we obviously, had to get to Rome and then fly out of there. But just every day I had to find just even if it was one thing, one image, this, it had to keep me going. And despite everything we go through every day, of whether we see it's out of our control or if it's not within our control, the headlines, you name it, things like that, or if it's in our control, but yet we don't have any understanding of the answers to why, and you ask those questions, you still gotta find and you have to make effort and fight to find the provision in the wilderness. I was lucky enough to find those two things, Rosella, as well as Italy and God's created world. And the last photo I really want to show you is this. I think this is a great photo. This to me, this is when I within eyesight of our hotel, or not hotel, sorry, the little apartment we were in, of where we stayed. I look at that and I say to myself, that is thousands of years old. That is a church, physical, yes, but it's thousands of years old. It gave me hope. Because I understood more, the lesson to me that God was teaching me was, Carlito, look at the lands you're in. The lands you are just temporarily visiting are lands for thousands of years, 2,000 years. People have walked this planet preaching Christ. People have tried very hard to deal with issues within the church on how to behave like Christ, right? They've been through their issues thousands of years, different sort of reformation movements, different sort of restoration movements, you name it. But there were St. Francis, so many different preachers, teachers, you name it, walking the planet, trying to just teach and preach about Christ, thousands of years old. I say to myself, in our country, in my town, where there's a church that celebrated its 100th, and it's 100 years old, the church, the building. Sometimes we look at it and say, wow, that's old. It's 100 years old. That is old for us. But you look at this thing, it's 1,000 years old. All I'm saying is we have a lot to learn. We have a lot to learn from one another and other people. We don't have it on straight. If we think we do, I submit to myself, and I'm only speaking for myself, I don't think I do. I have a lot to learn from other people who say they're Christians and other people who've been through things, other Christians who are going through pain right now. I have a lot to learn from them. I'm never going to tell them how to live their life. I'm going to learn how they wake up every day and how they persevere and how they hope. What do? How do they go through it? I need to learn from them. Our country is very young. This country taught me that, you know what? We're still going. We're still trying to figure it out. And it was quite an inspiration for me to say, hey, as long as we've been around, God's still trying to say, I'm patient with everyone. Lastly, I want to just end on this. And this is some things that opens up my mind a little more is when, we can get a lot of inspiration and strength from the Bible. Yes. We can even through pain. Yes. Through other people and their examples. Yes. This song was played repeatedly for me throughout this year at certain junctures when I was in pain. And this song was like the words mean so much to me that I can go back to it, listen to it, and be like, oh my gosh, this is really trying to say something to me. And what it says to me is God is like, I won't leave till I understand. He wants you when you're going through pain and when I'm going through the physical pain that I went through. He's like, I'm there. I will hear you cry. I will sit by your side. I will listen to you. And guess what? I want to hear and understand. You tell me. Are you mad? Tell me. Are you angry? Tell me. Are you questioning? I want to hear it. I'm with you on this journey. It kind of does for me some things when I read these words and I listen to the song. For me, it opens up and I ask questions to myself and I say, you know what? When we all go say, hey, I go through trials because I'm getting closer to God, Well, hey, there's nothing wrong for me in my free will and free mind saying and asking this question. I ask myself, I wonder if it's because God wants to get close to us. Maybe it's the opposite. Maybe he's like, look, there's free will out there. Everyone's going to have accidents. You're going to go through pain. And we can say to amongst each other, hey, we do it because we go through and we get closer to God. Well, maybe God's more excited because he's like, I'm going to get closer to you. I'm going to see how you react in this painful time. And if you're going to persevere, I'm going to persevere with you. I'm going to give you provisions if you see it and if you find it. And guess what? I mean, because it kind of speaks to me a little bit what Dave Mitchell was saying on Sunday. There is joy in the slowdown, but stress is in the speed up. So coming back to the States for me has been like, I'm not in a rush for anything because my life could be tomorrow as quick as a mist and a snap of the finger. So I'm just going to keep listening for all the positive things and all the cool things, and especially the things that comes from God. And what I've learned the most is through pain is where pain you learn the most, especially in your relationship with God. And comfort won't ever teach you anything positive, I don't think. It's not going to be a great teacher. Okay, so that's it. That's all I have to share with you. I'm going to stop sharing here because I know I may have gone on talking and talking, but it was really kind of, I thank you. It's sort of like a process for me to kind of revisit this. I never wanted to go back to those photos at some point, but then I was able to because it's 5 months later. And at the same time, I'm able to process this and kind of share with you what God's teaching me. All right. And I hope it helps you. That's really the goal of this, is I hope it helped you in any small way, because I know there is pain out there. And so, as a certified crisis counselor, I'm wearing my little sweatshirt right now, crisis text line. I know that things we do in certified, sorry, when things we do also in certified peer mental health coaching, like Sherry's a certified Chuck, things we do in the ministry presence, we listen, right? As crisis counselors, we listen. I just want you to know that pain, whether it's emotional, physical, spiritual, pain is real. It's valid. It's raw. It's emotional. It's hurtful. It's never to be minimized. The thing we all can relate with together and be unified on is that emotion. How you got there, I'm not going to judge you. How we all got to that pain, I don't think anyone should judge us. How we got there is because it's free world, free will, free this, right? There's accidents. It's going to happen. We should never judge each other on each other's pain. What we should do is if we relate to the pain, because you know what? The pain that you're feeling, I may have never had some broken ribs or broken whatever, that kind of stuff. But the pain, tell you what you described, I went through that too. And this is what happened to me. Now we can be unified and relate, and we can comfort one another, and we can have compassion for one another. I think that's what we can learn is through pain, through each other, we're just as human, and let's help one another continue in this fight, in this battle. And that's all I have for you tonight.